Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the City Council meeting, City of Arroyo Grande, for Tuesday, April the 10th. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Costello.
Here.
Councilmember Guthrie.
Here.
Councilmember Fellows.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Arnold.
Here.
And Mayor Ferrara.
Here. Before we go on to item three, I just want to announce that the council has just adjourned from closed session where we discussed legal issues, and we have no report at this time. Item three is our flag salute, and we're very pleased this evening to have Mr. Joe Brittingham from the Arroyo Grande Rotary Club, who will lead us in the flag salute. If you would please remain standing for our invocation, retired Pastor Richard Sharn is here to do that for us this evening.
Please face the flag, repeat after me, put your hand on your heart. I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible,
Let's pray together. Our Father in heaven, blessed and honored is your name, and we ascribe to you glory and power for now and forever. We want to thank you for our leaders, especially we bring to you our city council members tonight, and all who serve our community. You know their dedication and the desires of their heart. You know they long for good things to happen in our communities and are trying to do what is right. We would ask that you will give them wisdom along with an understanding heart and the patience to make right decisions, even though many times they have been compromised or challenged. And please let their hopes be renewed and their courage restored. We would ask that you will instill within them purity and fortified with strength. Help them to always deal justly. We desire our community to become notorious for righteous and wise leaders, known as a place of faithfulness and service. Help us all to be examples of light in the armed forces of our country. Please keep them always in your care and protection. May peace soon be established in Iraq and around the world and in America with life and liberty for all. We humbly ask these petitions in the name of the one we love and serve, our Savior and Lord. Amen. You may be seated.
Thank you, Pastor. Joe, I know you know the drill. So we're all anxious to hear about what Rotary's up to these days.
Well, you will be pleased to know Rotary has been very active both globally and locally. On the global front, we continue the International Polio Plus program, which is an ongoing effort to eradicate polio from the face of the earth. Pretty well got it limited down to just a handful of countries in the world where polio is not completely eradicated. We continue efforts there. We have ongoing work with a sister chapter in Hermosillo, Mexico. In recent years, we've able to provide 250 wheelchairs for needy people there. And more recently, we've helped to establish a $17,000 computer lab. Our annual conference is in June. We have a guest, none other than Bill Gates this year, who will be talking about the benefits to civilization as a whole and philanthropy. On a local front, we still have our annual $10,000 scholarship that's given to an Arroyo Grande high school student each year. It's for based on grade point average and essay on personal values and promise for leadership and service, and that's given once a year. We also have two scholarships given to Lopez High School graduates each year. In March, we painted the eaves at the South County Boys and Girls Club in Vociano. And we continue to provide funds for the South County Boys and Girls Club, the Central Coast Senior Center, Central Coast Exploration Station, the Slow Symphony, and we've helped to provide hundreds of admission tickets for children to see shows at the Clark Center, among others.
So. Been very busy. We really appreciate you being here tonight and hope you come back again. Thanks. Okay, that takes us to item five this evening, and if you will note, for those of you who have a copy of the agenda, we have two 5As. We're going to take the second 5A first, and I would like at this time to invite Mr. Bernie Coates to meet me at the, I'm sorry, Ms. Bernie Coates, proclamation recognizing the Clark Center on its fifth anniversary. Whereas in May 2002, the Clark Center for the Performing Arts in Arroyo Grande was opened on land provided by Lucia Mar Unified School District after a 15-year fundraising effort by the South County Performing Arts Foundation. And whereas the center is used as a community performing arts theater, a school auditorium, and as a training facility for students wishing to pursue careers in the arts and in theater operations. And whereas since its opening, the center has been the venue for over 1,200 performances and events promoted by the school district, the South County Performing Arts Association, and the community at large, thereby bringing quality culture and entertainment to the citizens of South San Luis Obispo County. And whereas the Clark Center has further supported students and teachers in the pursuit of the arts by awarding of grants and scholarships. And whereas the Clark Center Champions, a volunteer organization of dedicated citizens, has given over 30,000 hours of total time in providing ushering, catering, and other assistance and support to the center's activities. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Tony Ferrara, Mayor of the City of Arroyo Grande, on behalf of the City Council, do hereby recognize and honor the South County Performing Arts Foundation, the South County Performing Arts Association, and the Lucia Mar Unified School District on the 5th anniversary of the Clark Center for the Performing Arts for their joint contribution to the performing arts in South San Luis Obispo County. Bernie, it's a pleasure to present this to you, and we would invite you to say a few words. And if you have any other special things you would like to share, please feel free to do so.
It's almost unbelievable that it's 5 years since we opened the Clark Center. It took us 15 years to build it, and the time has flown since we opened it. I think everyone will agree it is a welcome addition, not only to Arroyo Grande, but to the South County. Every time I go and see a school, high school or elementary school presentation there, I almost still get teary because these students have a state-of-the-art facility. They work so hard on their presentations, and they have a facility where they can excel and their presentation goes over well to the audience. So we're very pleased with the success of the Clark Center. I hope you all agree you were
yellow shirts, and it makes me think like I'm missing something or forgetting something. Are you just here to watch, or do you have a... You look like you're ready to do something special. No? Okay, just checking in. All right, that takes us to item 6, agenda review. Oh, I'm sorry. We're not done with special presentations yet. How could I forget this one? I hope that most of you this evening and those watching are aware of the fact that we have a very special program in process in the city of Arroyo Grande. And this evening we're privileged to have two gentlemen, Bob Lund, who's the president of our Village Association, and Jim Bergman, who's on the staff of the city working community development. And they're here this evening to talk about Arroyo Grande in Bloom. Gentlemen.
Thank you, Mayor Ferrara, council members. Thank you, staff. I have to especially thank staff, because without the city of Arroyo Grande joining me in this effort, we wouldn't be able to do this. Sorry, Chuck and Joe, I'm going to put my back to you a little bit so I can address the audience. Arroyo Grande in Bloom was something that was presented to me last October, and I approached Rob Strong, our community development director, and Jim Bergman, and we went down to a presentation in Napomo with the CCGGA, the Central Coast Greenhouse Growers Association. And their guest speaker was one of the judges for America in Bloom. And after seeing the presentation and hearing what America in Bloom is all about and seeing the website, it is, to me, one of the most exciting things that our city has entered into in a long time, which I hope you will see as I present this to you. Jim tells me this is supposed to work. You do it.
Steve, could we get the middle bank of lights cut off in the back? There we go.
This PowerPoint presentation is an effort to explain to everybody what we as a group are trying to do. The Village Improvement Association joined with the city, and we paid a fee of $800, $400 apiece, to enter into a competition. American Bloom is a nonprofit organization that encourages beautification efforts, personal and community involvement, and educational programs through a fund. Our floral displays, tidiness, landscaped areas, urban forestry, heritage conservation, community involvement, turf and ground covers, and environmental effort. Within these eight categories, they're also judging us on municipal involvement, business involvement, and personal residence involvement. We have, so far, five chairs that are heading up each of these areas. In the area of tidiness, Jim Bergman has stepped forward and is heading up that group. I'm doing community involvement. We have Jane Line from the South County Historical Society, who is responsible for heritage. We have Kristen Barnick, head of our Arroyo Grande Forest. What's the name?
Tree Guild.
Thank you. And who else do we have? Oh, Ron Kindig and Mary G. Involvo are heading up the landscaped areas. In addition to the eight areas, we have publicity, which is done by Vivian Krug, and we have the books that have to be given to the judges when they make their visit and their tour, and that's being done by Linda Shepherd. The appealing benefits of the American Bloom program are many: civic pride, increased community involvement, cooperation between government, business, private citizen, community groups, economic development, increased property values, increased tourism, decreased vandalism, and then, of course, feedback from the judges, which are going to help us as an ongoing organization to continue and improve what we do for the city of Arroyo Grande. We've already gotten a lot of things done. We're going to actually establish a permanent organization that's going to be a 501c3. Right now it's under the umbrella of the Village Improvement Association, but we're working on developing a separate corporation. We want to create much exposure and interest to all of the community. We want to involve senior citizens, the civic organization, students in the schools, the church organizations, the whole community. We want to document and celebrate all of our community efforts, and we're going to do that as soon as we get our judges' evaluation this summer. We're going to have an event over at the Rotary Bandstand on the Nelson Green. We're looking to identify areas of improvement for needs and participate in the national contest every year. Okay, well, I'm going to let Jim take over on this because he's put together this little PowerPoint demonstration. He's actually the genius behind how this works. Jim?
Careful with the word genius there. So projects today, we want to share pictures. This was a group headed up by the Arroyo Grande Kiwanis Club, and they came out and did a cleanup in front of the Paulding Wall, which is on East Branch Street, right between upper and lower campuses of Paulding. And they cleaned out a lot of brush that was there. They reclaimed a large part of the bicycle lane. They also made the wall visible, and they've planted geraniums above the wall. And as a community effort, the school district then came in and put a drip irrigation system in that to keep the flowers watered. So that was the first project. Also that same day, a group of volunteers from Arroyo Grande and Bloom wanted to clean up the city entrance sign right at Highway 101 and West Branch Street. And you can see them there. They cleaned out a bunch of plants, and they planted new flowers. The Parks Department came along and dropped off some wood chips for us and also reestablished the drip irrigation system there. Next picture, litter removal. For the last 2.5 months, every Saturday morning, we get a group of people who come out for an hour and a half, and pick up litter throughout the city. They've done all of El Camino Real from Grand Avenue to Oak Park, and they went on to the other side and did for West Branch from Oak Park to about the Briscoe Underpass. And last weekend, they started on Grand Avenue. And you can see a lucky volunteer gets a new set of hubcaps there in the car. Grand Avenue projects, we started to do some work. Here was at Gill's Liquor, which is on the corner of Grand Avenue and Cortland. The crews went through and helped Mr. Gill clean up the property out in front, replant some plants, fix up the drip irrigation system, Also at that same time, crews went down and got the weeds out of the cracks between the curb and the sidewalk all the way down Grand from Oak Park to Elm and then back up the other side. And we also had a litter crew pick up litter there also. Another project on Grand Avenue, this we call our one-hour makeover. Three people went out in about an hour and cleaned up the tree well in front of Spango Communications, took out some gravel that was in there, put in some topsoil, planted some plants, and now the business owner is taking care of those plants. The Village Improvement Association has been planting trees in the village, as you can see. They've been reworking the pots, putting flowers in there, and they're looking pretty nice. And by the time the judges get here, should be nice and in bloom. There's also efforts at the median. Like I said, every Saturday morning at 8 a.m., we meet at the Park and Ride, which is in front of Francisco's Country Kitchen on El Camino Real. We usually work for about an hour or two. We try not to wear anyone out, and that way you get on with your weekend. Also, the Tree Guild will be planting trees on Saturday, April 28th at 8 a.m. You meet at the fire station parking lot, and we'd appreciate an RSVP to Kristen Barnich. Her email is there. You can also find it on our Arroyo Grande and Bloom website, and you can find a whole bunch of information and a link to the national contest. And the last slide, we just wanted to thank, one more thing you could do to help us out is we need sponsors, business sponsors, people who could help us get a little bit of money in the bank so that it's easier for us to purchase flowers, planting materials, tools, trash bags. And also we're welcome to ideas. You'll see that email on our website where you get us ideas and suggestions and projects. And when you come up with an idea, we'll probably have you headed up too. And last, we've gotten a lot of support, not only from the council, from the city manager, from department heads, from the Chamber of Commerce, Merchant Association on East Grand Avenue, service groups like the Kiwanis Group, the Campfire USA, and also we've had a lot of help out of the Central Coast Greenhouse Growers Association and local growers to provide plants to us. Very much at a wholesale price, if not great discounts. So with that, we appreciate your time in front of this important council meeting, and we'll keep doing some work, and we'd like you to come out and help. Thank you.
Okay. Is that it?
That's it.
Okay, I just want to first of all acknowledge both Jim and Bob for just a tremendous effort in helping to coordinate this and this entire program, and we owe them a debt of gratitude, and we're keeping our fingers crossed for May 7th and 8th. So remember, 8 o'clock at the Park and Ride lot over on El Camino. Gentlemen, thank you so much. Okay, now we'll go to item 6, agenda review. Move that all ordinances presented tonight be read in title only, and all further readings be waived.
So moved. Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. That takes us to item 7, community comments and suggestions agenda. Anyone? Okay. Going once, going twice. Nobody after all of that. Okay. Then we'll close community comments and suggestions, and we'll go to item 8, which is our consent agenda. Once again, this is a group of agenda items that the council normally approves in one action, unless there is a particular item on consent that a member of the council would like to pull for further clarification and or perhaps an individual vote. This is also an opportunity for members of the public to come forward and comment on any of the items on the consent agenda. And this evening, if you're following along, those are consent items 8A through 8I. So at this time, if there is anyone in the audience who would like to come forward on any of those consent items, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. Good evening.
Hello. My name is Maggie Summers, and I am here on behalf of Destination Imagination. Mike Lebo had submitted the paperwork to Mr. Adams, and he had something come up this evening and was not able to make it, so he asked that I come in his place. And first off, I wanted to thank the city of Arroyo Grande for always being so very supportive of this really important program that all of our students in this area have an opportunity to participate in. And I was sorry that the lady from the Clark Center left, because I wanted to thank her for having such a beautiful venue for a lot of our different competitions that we've had take place there. One of the things that's so terrific about the Destination Imagination program is that everything that goes on is done by the students. It's completely student-run. All the decisions are made by them, not by the adults. In fact, if they are found to have had any type of interference, then they receive deduction points. So in an effort to stay along that vein, I have a couple of students who would like to speak to you.
I knew we were going to get at this at some point.
Hi, I'm Katie Joy.
And I'm Claire Summers. Destination Imagination is the world's largest problem solvement to mechanical with a small amount of theatrics. This amazing extracurricular program meets all California state standards.
This great program is available to all students in our area. This year, almost 200 young people took part at the CMR regional level. Seven teams made up of 50 local students went to Sacramento 2 weeks ago to participate at the state competition. Our two teams here tonight are our 2007 Californian state champions, and we will represent our area at global finals at the University of Tennessee at the end of May, along with 5,400 other students from around the world.
It will cost each team $8,000 to travel and compete at global finals. This amount does not include the cost for parents or team managers. We are here to ask for a $10,000 donation to help offset $1,000 donation to help offset our costs. That works out to $83 per student. Thank you for your generosity. We promise to do our best and make our city proud.
Thank you. It is part of the program to give the council a communal noticed, heart attack.
Mr. Adams
here.
got an immediate sunburn over there. I'm hoping that the next group can come up, and they each have something that they learned from participating in this program. There you go, stand in front of the microphone.
It doesn't matter what order. Oh, yeah, you do have first, don't you?
Yeah. This program has taught us lots of skills that we will use throughout our life. Here are some examples.
We learned how to use mechanical design to create things that work, move, and do things. We have created simple and complex machines that use pulleys, wheels, and axles.
We have become comfortable speaking in public. We have learned how to rely on our peers, not our parents, for ideas and solutions.
We are learning to solve problems. We can work with others and support each other's ideas. We have learned how to use power tools safely and independently.
We learned how to research information and turn it into something that we can use creatively. We are learning how to think on our feet.
We are learning how to take an idea and make it into a working thing. We have designed and made our own costumes, written our own...
Five sound people. We're rocking, popping, popcorn, we're rocking, popping, popcorn.
Thank you very much, ladies. This is the fun part. This is what makes it all worthwhile, at least for us. So, very nice. And we want to hear about what happens in Tennessee. So will you please come back and keep us up to date? Let us know how you did. Okay? Okay, any other consent item issues for members of the public? Anyone like to come forward on any other item? Okay, if not, we will close the community portion of the consent agenda, and we'll bring this back to the council. What is the will of the council, or are there any items that members would like to pull this evening for further discussion?
Mayor Farrar, I'd like to pull 8F.
Okay. Any others? Okay, if there are no others, I'll entertain a motion to approve consent items 8A through 8I with the exception of 8F.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Any issues to read there this evening?
We have two for the price of one this evening. Okay. Item 8H is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande amending Section 10.08.060B of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code. And item 8I is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande amending Section 2.28.050D of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code regarding the meetings of the Senior Advisory Commission.
Okay. Thank you, Tim. Any other comments or discussion? Okay. We have a motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Fellows?
Yes.
Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Thank you. 8F, Councilmember Fellows.
Regarding the, the banners over the street, I was on the Architecture Review Committee, must have been 3 or 4 years ago, when the subject of the banners over the street in the village came up. At that time, the Architecture Review Committee was concerned that banners might become permanent, changing from 10 days before the event to 30 days before the event, to reduce that to 20, or go right in between 20 days before the event, so there would be a gap in between the banners for various events. And also, item 4, where the staff is recommending that the requirement for a 10-day interval between the banners be eliminated, I would recommend that that's not a good idea based on the Architectural Review Committee's discussion of a few years back, and that the interval be eliminated only at this time between the July 4th banner and the car show banner, because those two events do come close together, and that way the staff wouldn't have to take one banner down, wait a few days, put the next one up, and then perhaps have no more than one other event during the year where there was a 10-day interval in between. So those are my suggestions, and I know the city manager has some comments regarding my suggestions.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments on Councilmember Fellows' observations?
Just one quick question. Has this gone to architectural? Did this go to architectural review, this revision?
The actual specific proposed changes have not, but the issue came up at a recent banner, and they discussed in general the changes.
Thank you.
Steve, did you want to make some comments on this?
Oh, just that, yeah, as far as the 20 days, I think that's fine. We just felt that the 10 days was too short given some of the activities, and so I have no objection to the 20 days. I think it may actually be more reasonable than the 30 days. The interval period, we were just recommending, because there are instances when we have banners up and another one's about to come up, and it's easier just to leave one up for a few more days and take one down at the same time we're putting the other up. There's quite a bit of work involved. The fire department needs to bring the rig out, and they do all the work. And so just save some staff time by eliminating that interval.
How often does that occur that we're really – because I guess my thought is if we're not really running into this very often, it doesn't seem like a big deal. If we're looking at having banners up all year round, then I can understand the concern. But since we're really only talking about – banners where the city has some financial or time commitment involved, we really aren't talking about that many events, are we?
Well, and we agree with the objective that Councilmember Fellows stated of not having these up all years, and that one would like to comply with the guidelines, so it makes it a little easier for us not to have that interval restriction within the guidelines.
Okay. Any other comments? Well, based on the city manager's comments, Councilmember Fellows, if we were to, in number three, if we were to go with 20 days, as you suggested, I personally agree with the logic that I know it's not the safest thing in the world to have a public works fellow go up there twice in a cherry picker and a basket. If we can be a little flexible in number four,
I'm okay with number four. I know that if it becomes a problem, we can discuss it again at a later date. So that's fine. 20 days is good.
If we were to change 30 days to 20 days in item three, does anybody have an issue with that? Okay, then why don't you try a motion?
Mr. Mayor, I move that we change the wording in 8F. Got it. Thank you. On item three to 20 days instead of 30 days, and that would be a change from 10 days, and four would remain as recommended by staff.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Any discussion? Okay, hearing none, roll call.
Just to clarify, we are adopting a resolution with that modification in it.
Councilmember Fellows?
That's true. That's
yes.
True. Resolution, do you need it read?
For the record.
Okay.
For the record. Pardon me.
The title is a resolution of the City Council of City of Rio Grande approving standards for special event banners for community-based events with the modification to page 2, striking 30 and interlineating 20.
Okay, thanks. Now we'll do a roll call.
Councilmember Fellows?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Arnold?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. That will take us to item 9, public hearings. We have none this evening. Item 10, continued business. 10A is a consideration of pre-application discussion, case number 06-009, revised project description, vesting tentative tract map, and planned use development, case number 01-001.
Development proposed for an area, a 26-acre site in the vicinity of James Way and La Cañada. It is part of the Rancho Grande plan development. The zoning is PD 1.2, and this project is considered under the 1990 general plan. A revised final subsequent EIR was previously prepared and certified by City Council. The applicant is now proposing 17 single-family lots and clustering them in the northeastern portion of the site to better address environmental impacts. The 18th lot is a 22-acre open space parcel intended to provide for a wildlife corridor, both for in the riparian area and in the oak woodland area. This is the revised configuration of for the clustered residential lots to be accessed again from La Cañada via a road that crosses the east fork of Meadow Creek. And this road varies in width from 32 down to 24 feet. 24 to 32 feet, 32 feet up near the proposed residential units. For comparison purposes, this is a previous 21-unit proposal that the council considered at the end of 2005. The project design will come back through the permit process to Architectural Review Committee, to Planning Commission, and back to council eventually with all the conditions and mitigation measures, including a proposed design manual that will function similarly to other areas in Rancho Grande. The design manual will also include provisions for long-term mitigation and monitoring, and we can discuss that a little later in the presentation by myself or the applicant. The project is primarily avoiding what was identified previously as a Class 1 environmental impact, and that was the Pismo clarkia flower. It's an endangered and special status plant. And the roads are not proposed to be in that area, although a portion of the road is. Just a quick review of the issues. Oak removal was and still is an issue for the site. 33 trees are proposed to be removed, 27 to be transplanted. Riparian and wetland protection is a consideration due to the road crossing and the road location in proximity to the riparian area and wetlands and the proposed development uphill from it. Fire safety and emergency access, slope stability, zoning provisions for subdividing land with steep slopes, and aesthetics consideration for building with steep slopes. Again, the long-term site monitoring. And just mentioning that the previous project description included some enhancements tied to the environmental review. Environmental review for this project will still be forthcoming. Included in your packet is a scope from to prepare an addendum, which is an environmental document that can tear off of a previously certified EIR by RINCON consultants. And this has been the identified document that we think will be adequate to review environmental impacts for the project. An addendum can be used for projects where there's nothing new to be considered or impacts that are anticipated to be more severe, although the addendum will take this proposed project and identify every impact as required by the California Environmental Quality Act. This is just a section of the site. Give you a clearer picture of the tree removal that's included in your packets. This applicant can go into more detail. You can see the larger circles and larger shaded circles are trees that are proposed to be impacted either by removal and mitigation at a higher than usual mitigation rate as required by the certified EIR, or proposed to be transplanted. And the hatched shaded areas to the right of the screen are areas for transplanted trees or mitigation trees. When this project comes forward again, you'll have both CEQA findings and findings again for the map and the clustering of the residential units through a PUD permit. And I'll stop there and ask the council to review and provide preliminary comments on the revised project description and consider the contract amendment for the preparation of an addendum to the previously certified EIR by RENCON consultants. And now I'll answer some questions now or just turn it over to the applicant, whatever you desire.
I think if it's okay with the council, we'll go ahead and hear the entire presentation if the applicant wants to come forward, and then we'll ask for questions, and then we'll allow for some public comment as well.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor, members of the council. My name is Dennis Law, and I'm here on behalf of Castle Rock Development. I will provide the first part of the presentation, essentially focusing on brief history of the project, and Jason Tyre will provide a more complete description of the revised project design and would be the one to answer more technical questions regarding the design, et cetera. The Meadows project, as it is a term now being used for what was originally called Track 1998. I will, as I said, provide you with a brief history of the project. We'll give you some of the designs that have existed in the past and in the current redesign. And essentially what we're trying to do here tonight is to get your feedback if you go to the next slide, please. Tonight's goals, as I said, is to present this redesign to you in a pre-application format so we can have your feedback for the benefit of making any additional changes that should be made before we run the project back through the formal process. Track 9, this is a vicinity map, and I think you all generally know where the project site is, so if we can go to the next slide. This is a map of the original Rancho Grande Master Plan that was adopted in 1978. Track 1998 is shown there, and it was a part of... for a minute there, Teresa. Project objectives, as you'll see in a minute, is a 36-unit project. This particular slide is to remind everyone that in your plans, in terms of satisfying in your 2003 housing element, you're giving 42 units credit for this particular property. So the original project objectives of 36 units were well within your own plans for the project site. Now, I'm sorry, go ahead to the next slide. This is the actual project that was originally submitted. It's a 36-unit project. The original environmental document for this was the SEIR, which is a subsequent environmental impact report. The original environmental impact report was done for adjacent tracks, and it included a review of track 1998 as a part of that, and so the project and the SCIR were built upon that earlier environmental document. In the SCIR, there was a substantial section for alternatives, and some of those alternatives showed that this particular design was not the best design for the site because of the impacts of the Pismo Clarkia, and there was a particular alternative design that shifted the units up over to the right of the screen in an effort to avoid impacts to the Clarkia. If we go to that, that was the 21-unit design that was then developed and came back before you the last time, and it was again based on that particular alternative. The removal of the lots along the bottom side there were primarily to avoid direct impacts to the Pismo Clarkia. And this is the design that you denied, but without prejudice, to come back to you with a redesign of the project. Then the next slide, and this is where we are today. And this is the redesign that Jason will talk to you about in just a minute. Not quite. The highlights here, though, to just touch on them. We heard from you concerns with regard to impacts to the riparian corridor. You'll see in some other slides, the riparian, as you probably remember, runs across the top part of the parcel. With the last time, which was the size of that buffer zone, essentially, there's no concern in that area because the home sites are completely removed from that area. Another concern we heard you speak to was the wildlife corridor. The wildlife corridor comes up from the other side of James Way, and this area allows for a pretty sizable open space that's uninterrupted in its connection to the wildlife corridor going off on the other side of James Way and extends into the adjoining tract 1884. So it really keeps the open space area all in an integral way and improves substantially the wildlife corridor. And then the last thing we heard you say was concerns about woodland impact. As you heard just stated, there is still some impacts to the oaks, but they're substantially reduced from the prior design. So with that general overview of a history and a general overview of the revised design, I'd like to turn it over to Jason. He can give you some more of the specifics.
Okay. Can we go back one? Good evening, Mr. Mayor, fellow council members. My name is Jason Tyra. I'm with Castle Rock Development. And what my goal will be today is just to introduce you some of the concepts behind the design, the way it was taken, and some of the parameters that were used. So If you have any questions during my during my presentation, please interrupt me. I prefer to have a more interactive discussion about it than just kind of coming back to it afterwards. And I'm also going to try to stick to my script as much as possible, so I'll try not to blunder this. As Mr. Law has introduced, I'm here tonight to introduce the concepts behind the proposed conceptual design and the benefits of restructuring of the lots and the roadways. And as you can see from this slide, there's a 17-unit development that's being proposed with a 22.3 acres of open space being proposed. That's about 86% of the overall parcel size. Next slide, please. This slide is provided mostly as a means to give you a perspective of the relationship of the topography and the terrain in relation to the proposed project in relation to the surrounding properties. It's a little hard to see some of the detail on here, but I've provided each of you with a copy of the presentation to try to help with that. Let me see if I can make this pointer work. And you can see the hump, the rise in the terrain, the rise in topography, and the trees essentially block the view coming from this way. And over here, you can see a representation of the neighbor's residence to try to give you a perspective of what they would see. Looking at the bottom here, this is section E. This runs from Asilo on the Highlands development across the property up the hill up towards the open space on the other side of 1834. This one's probably the more visible area. Here you got the creek line, and then it extends up the project up to the top here. And then again, this is an approximation of the residence over here based on elevation data that shows an approximate line of sight of the way the project's going to be viewed. The sections B, C, and D here are just meant to, again, kind of a more close-up represent the section cuts through the property this way, kind of working down the hill, again showing the rise in topography in relation to the proposed development. Now I want to take a step back, and I just want to touch on how we can go to the next slide, please. How we kind of came to this location on the property. Looking at the habitat map provided in the FSEIR, it was determined that feasibility for development existed primarily in the areas of the California annual grassland or along the coastal scrub. That would be this area here, the annual grassland, and this would be the coastal scrub area here. Based on the statements in the EER, Council's findings and responses to the two previous designs, the area of the California grassland was avoided due to the convergence of the setback requirements, the setback buffers originally brought up in the EIR. This pushes the development into the area of the coastal scrub, where although buffers would still be encroached, the Class 1 impact of taking Pismo-Clarkia would be avoided. So the Pismo-Clarkia noted in this area here is well outside of the proposed development and roadway that's going to exist in here. If I can have the next slide. Now, the next step we took was to structure a habitat ranking analysis for the project, which is often used in CEQA analysis processes. This analysis was based on parameters and values created by Outhouse and Mead, who also completed an instrument survey habitat map of the property, as can be seen from the slide. The map is structured in a hierarchy form. The lighter portion here, which is right there, that's the eucalyptus riparian. That's the riparian area that's been overwhelmed by the non-native eucalyptus trees. And the additional, I'll try to pronounce this, the grasslands. There's actually a more formal term for it. But the grasslands were denoted as the next lowest portion, which actually includes this area here, and the annual grassland in this area. And the portion that we're in right now is the coastal scrub area, up in this area, which was ranked about mid-level on the ranking system. Now, based on these two maps, led us to the lot design that you're going to see next. Have a next slide, please. Well, the specific request that we heard from council was that they wanted to see smaller, tighter, more clustered lots. And that's what we exactly what we did. We came in here, we identified what the minimum was for the city. We came with 7,200 square feet and figured out as tight as we can get them, narrow as we can get them. So we came with narrow, deep lots with very narrow setbacks, allowing the lots to ascend the slope this would be the eastern side of the property. It was also indicated by the council the desire to have smaller homes, which is accommodated by these lots with homes that are ranging in the neighborhood of 1,800 to 2,400 square feet on a conceptual level at this point. Now, regarding after the lot design, we're going to look at access and roads. Can I have the next slide, please? Now, the issue of roads and access is probably one of the key changes that occurred in this project, besides the relocation of the lots, obviously. But one of the most important factors that, in discussion with Public Works, we discussed the use of thinner roads, reducing the width down to 24 feet, varying it between 24 and 32 feet. The 24-foot portion starts about right where it leaves the lot, extends all the way this way, just to about starts the lots. And this basically means that in the areas where the open space is adjacent to the roadway, the 24-foot width would exist. The 32-foot width would exist on lot frontages to allow for parking spaces, on-street parking spaces in front of the lots. It's also part of the master plan for the City of Aurora Grande's Parks and Rec. Can I have the next slide, please? Moving on to the grading design, just wanted to hit a few key subjects on here. Whenever you ascend up a slope, it's very difficult. So in this situation here, what we did is we based it on a 15% grade road, which is obviously the maximum road elevation grade that we're permitted. In allowing these lots to ascend up this slope, we basically use a terrace-style grading format, which basically meant that the pads are separated here by, in this case, retaining walls. And instead of using large retaining walls, we want those lower-style retaining walls that are then spaced out to create buffer strips between them. So they have landscaping strips between the walls, allows for screening to occur, for not only for the walls, but for views from above, for the neighbors. Now, the next issue I want to get after is the site drainage. Site drainage took a considerable amount of time, and I'll just kind of go through the narrative I have here. The site drainage was a specific concern in the design of this project. Review of the conceptual design took on many forms and explored various alternatives. The focus was preserving flows while maintaining control and reducing the potential for sediment. The resulting preliminary design included the following goals: maximize the amount of drainage from the open space around and under the project to prevent mixing of run-on and run-off drainage flows. This is proposed to be achieved through the use of surface and subsurface drainage system around the perimeter of the project. And that would include in here, down the side of this project, down this side of the project, across the face of this road. Waters would be caught and allowed to pass underneath the road and release back into the wetland habitat that exists on this side, allowing it to pass through it without going across the road. These waters would be caught and brought down into this area and again pass through this area. And so there would be a series of drains that would exist here, 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 and possibly here. Drainage from the lots and the roadway are to be collected and conveyed through the public storm drainage system, which is in here. And you've seen these green arrows are pointing in the direction. That water is brought down to the on this hill is brought down to the historical drainage patterns, in particular to the existing wetlands. Drainage ultimately flows into the James Way retarding basin, which was specifically designed to retard the waters from the Rancho Grande development to pre-development levels. And that particular design included the design of 1998, the development of 1998. If I go to the next map, please. As a result of this project design, design revision, significant benefits were achieved by overlaying the proposed design on the EIR habitat map. We can note the following: encroachment into the valley foothill riparian, which is noted in blue, has been significantly reduced. Riparian habitat is still encountered at the crossing of the proposed road. However, this particular area is rated very low on the habitat ranking map due to the infiltration of non-native eucalyptus tree growth. The low value of this area is the prime reason for the selection of the crossing at this location. A significant portion of wetlands, including fresh emergent, are now avoided. However, portions of seasonal wetlands are still encountered along the eroded drainage on the eastern slope. That would be this area here. Mitigation to be achieved through working with the federal and state regulating agencies, as described in the EIR. Riparian buffers are avoided, and the concern for HOA protection of the creek line habitat has been significantly reduced. Wildlife corridors have been expanded along the creek line and on the western portion of the property, in this area here, and along there as well. Pismocarchia occurrence has also been avoided, obviously here. And there's a 64% reduction of Oakland wood impacts from the previous project layout. This is directly due to the reduced road widths and the revised lot layout, which allowed for greater flexibility to avoid trees and minimizing impacts. Tree impacts have been reduced to a total of 61 trees with 33 removals and 28 transplants.
Next slide.
Now, looking at the constraints map, overlaying the proposed design on the constraints map from the EIR, we can also note the following benefits. Intrusion in the riparian setbacks are greatly reduced, with only Lot 1 and a minor portion of Lot 2 encroaching into the 50-foot setback. That would be here and here. Restructuring and reduction, as that can be seen in the next slide. This slide depicts the use of recommendations in the EIR geotechnic reports that can be used as mitigation to allow for development on steeper slopes. The EIR did not appear to give any credit to these valid engineering concepts. If large cut slopes are not used in areas of steep slopes, and in lieu a combination of erosion control fabrics, drainage structures, and possibly retaining walls, the issue of accelerated runoff and erosion are significantly reduced, if not eliminated. In the case of the proposed design, large cut slopes are not proposed in areas where steep slopes occur. The concern for slope stability was also addressed by each of the engineers, and again, the conclusion was with proper engineering, construction is feasible. I would propose that based on the comments by the geotechnical engineers, and that additional mitigations do exist to permit development on steeper slopes in excess of 20%. If you would note in your slide, a copy of your slide, you'll see references from the EIR's geotechnical reports, just snippets of their report and key conclusions that they made. In conclusion, we feel the proposed design offers significant benefits, such as riparian impact reduction, pismocarchia avoidance, wildlife corridor expansion, woodland impact reduction. We feel the proposed design achieves a balance between the EIR mitigations, the characteristics of the surrounding neighborhood, and the project objectives. And with that, I would like to open it up for questions, comments, and we would just love to hear your input.
Okay. At this time, we're looking for questions or clarifications in the staff report and or the presentation. But before we finalize our comments, I want to give the public an opportunity to comment as well. So any questions or clarifications either for Teresa or those representing the applicant tonight? Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Tyler, could I ask you a couple of questions? You want to come on back? Jason, excuse me.
Last name is Tyra.
Tyra. Okay. Thank you, Jason.
Sure.
A couple of questions about grading design, roads and access. Right there. Is this the one you're looking for? I want the one that's got the multiple colors that shows the percentages.
Well, Teresa, can you bring up your slope map that you have?
Let me get that up. There we go. Can I borrow the laser pointer there, Tony? It seems to me that in this area here, we've got this lot, this lot, this lot, this lot, this lot, and some over here are all hitting areas that are the 30%. So what's your definition of avoiding steep slopes if you're only talking about 13 and 14?
In those particular areas, that is the location of the incisement eroded drainage. And what you're seeing is the incisement of the drainage. And that area is proposed to be filled so that steep slopes wouldn't exist.
Oh, so you're talking about adding fill in there. What kind of retaining walls are we talking about being in there? Would there be
in that area or on the lots?
On the lots in that area, yeah.
If you're talking about types of walls, we haven't really talked about types, but we've there's block walls, there's concrete walls, there's sandblasted walls, many different features.
That's the only question I have for you right now.
Okay.
Okay. Any other questions?
I had one also.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. You mentioned on the filtering of the water that was going to be coming out of the actual neighborhood itself, not from the surrounding open space, and it was going to run through a filter, and you mentioned siltation. Would there be any other kind of filtration, I guess, occurring so that any kind of like oil runoff or pesticides or anything, is there any plans to potentially capture any of those?
That was definitely a consideration. In fact, we're still exploring different options. We haven't set on one particular one. We explore it anywhere from just natural biofiltration type devices. That would be bioretention ponds, infiltration trenches, bioswales, that kind of thing. We investigated catch basin drainage filters, which are more, in some cases, more inclined to capture, but those are different ways that we plan on doing it. Now, whether that would take all the pollutants out, I couldn't answer your question. I would have to get back to you on that. Well, if I could add one more item on that. There's also the issue that the separation of the where the water would be released, there's a significant portion of grassland that would exist between that and the actual creek line that would exist. So that in itself also acts as a buffer to a degree. So any grassland it would encounter would also act as a buffer and a filter device of sorts.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Teresa, I had a question it was actually in Exhibit A, and you pretty much defined the addendum, the EIR addendum, and my question is that I recognize that it's not required for it to be set forth for public review as a an EIR or supplemental EIR would be. But is that a determination that the council can make if it so chooses? Can we take an EIR addendum and propose a public review period?
Certainly. Staff can notice that the addendum is available for review and set a review period very similar to or the same as a supplemental or a regular EIR.
Okay, and I know we've covered this before, and it's been a while since I've been up to that access road, but if you refresh my memory, is there a – what was the reason why – I think at one point we looked at this emergency access here as a potential ingress and egress for the tract to somehow avoid cutting across Meadow Creek and the wetlands here. Refresh my memory again why that won't work.
This particular emergency access was proposed to address building and fire concerns as to the length of the cul-de-sac even in the prior project proposals. And it was always proposed as an emergency-only access and trail, and the trail system is mapped in the recreation element of the general plan that goes through the site and out to the open space of the 1834 site. So this access provides...
Roadway?
It would be a condition to be constructed and operated only as an emergency access and pedestrian trail. So there would be gates, crash gates. Or, the road is only proposed to be 18 feet wide. And it would depend on how it was conditioned, but that's how it was previously conditioned when it was brought before you.
I think, Mr. Mayor, if I can answer, if I remember correctly, it's also very steep back there. I think there was some discussion as to the difficulty of trying to make it a real road because of the steepness.
Okay. Yeah, that's ringing a bell. Okay, thanks. Any other questions, clarifications on the staff report, Councilmember Fellows, and then Councilmember Costello?
Teresa, can we go back to the colorful slide that shows the incisement, and then Jason, can I ask you a question? Can I assume incisement means erosion? Are there gullies there now?
Incisement?
Yes. You spoke about this steepness.
The drainage going down the side of the property, yes.
Okay. And so it looks to me like in the past, or maybe even currently, quite a bit of water flows in that area currently. Is that correct? That's why it's incised. That's why it's eroded?
It is eroded because water has flowed through that area, yes.
Okay.
As to the amount of water, I couldn't say. I mean, you can estimate that from the a drainage calculation standpoint, yes.
I haven't been up there because of the poison oak that's down below, but it's impressive to me that there's apparently been so much erosion in that spot. And I did see your drainage plan, so I assume that will handle that. And I had one other question. On lot two, there's a three-trunked oak tree. I think each one of the trunks is 14 inches on lot one that, in your plan, I think it's to be removed. I don't understand why that's a relatively flat lot. It's a flat lot, and I have a question about that.
Well, the lot is brought up to meet the elevation of the road, and in order to make the driveway meet the roadway and at the right elevation, the lot has to be raised in that particular location. I'd be happy to look at that a little closer to see if something better can be done.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, John. Now I've got a question for staff. If we look in attachment 2, on page 5, under reservation, it talks about transfer of density to the Noyes Road project. And what's the linkage here?
And it was considered in looking at alternatives to avoid impacts and by placing some units on that site as well as the site. And so it was just included in the alternative analysis for the EIR.
And was that including some sort of environmental analysis on the Noyes Road property?
Very preliminary analysis. Alternatives aren't analyzed to the same degree as a project that's being analyzed for environmental review. So any development that's ever proposed for the Noyes Road property would have to go through its own environmental review process.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions or clarifications? Okay, seeing none, hearing none. While this is not a public hearing, we will allow public comment. If there are members of the audience that would like to come up and say a few words on this item, I would ask that you be mindful of the three-minute rule. Please state your name for the record and address the council as a whole.
Mayor Ferrara and gentlemen of the City Council, good evening. My name is Robert Brownson, and I reside at 653 Asilo here in Arroyo Grande. I would ask if you have this document, the map that has something called tree inventory, or don't you have that?
We have it.
We have that. You do have it. Okay. Because part of what I'm going to discuss is Tree City USA. A lot of us have been concerned for a great many years about the protection of Track 1998, now 01001. However, I was relieved to find this new preliminary application impressive because of far fewer negative environmental impacts than we've seen in previous developmental proposals from this company, Castle Rock Development, including, in this case, total avoidance of the federal and state protected plant species Bismolclarkia. However, some very serious concerns remain evident, some very serious negative impacts. Paramount among those is the fact of taking 60 oak trees, plus positioning home sites. Now, I don't know how to use this. Am I doing anything here? Am I? Oh, there. All right. Of positioning these home sites here. Where am I with this thing? Okay, here. You see all this wood? This is all oak woodlands right here. And these houses all abut it. In this house here in Arroyo Grande. Wildlife habitat would be negatively impacted by the loss of overhead tree canopy, as well as the introduction of noise, light, and pedestrians, all of which would drive wildlife away from breeding and foraging in that nice, rich woodland area because the home sites are located so close by. Wildlife would scatter. Intrusion on wildlife would be unavoidable if the houses are positioned as they are suggested here. However, I will take a look at one possible alternative. If you take, sorry, you guys. Okay, there it is. If you take this out and you take this house out, you've got a healthy open area of oak wildlife. That's about the best I can see. Otherwise, I mean, all of this is impacted anyhow, but by taking it out, it would increase the preserved section of the woodland and it would enhance the wildlife corridor considerably. However, would it be a less negative total impact considering that the houses up the row, 15, 16, and 17, this one, and this one, all continued correctly abut oak woodland. So I don't know if taking those two houses would be sufficient. I just happen to see that we might be able to make some kind of an improvement there. Also of concern is the fact of runoff from impervious surfaces, driveways and roads and rooftops, causing erosion along the creek banks and ultimately the potential sedimentation of Meadow Creek. And we're talking here the runoff of gasoline and oil and pesticides and, you know, all that gardening stuff. One very special existing condition of approval that we have in place and we wanted in place when you're EIR was ratified is a 50-foot setback from the edge of the riparian area along Meadow Creek. This is violated in two places in this plan. Up further on this, where you first come in by lots 1 and 2, and then down here where you see it would be further, you can't see it up here in this map, but there's also right here where there's less than a 50-foot back, and then by lots 1 and 2 up there. So we still have the problem with this developer not agreeing to comply with 50-foot setbacks from the edge of the riparian area. This is, again, something that was ratified in our environmental impact report. A positive thing, the elimination of the highly flammable eucalyptus grove, we would applaud that, and the planting of the improved riparian habitat in its place, that would not be permitted. So though I'm impressed by progress, we still have CEQA violations, 50-foot setback violations, we have erosive soil, we have 30-foot grades of 30 foot or more. Hopefully these issues can be addressed. These negative impacts have got to be eliminated or corrected. Otherwise, I don't believe, and much of us don't believe, that this plan should move forward. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else who would like to come forward? Again, I would ask, please be mindful of the three-minute rule.
Vic Beeler, 565 Easy Street. Back in the 80s, I came into the same room, and we fought to get this property held in a pristine condition in perpetuity. That was the words used, in perpetuity. And along with the approval of the Highlands, that was the goal. The reason the clustered housing ended up down below is because nobody knew what the ramifications with the environment were at the time. And the idea was to keep it as a postage size type development within the huge 26 acres. And now we're here again trying to fight it and keep it to some degree of relevance. I agree it takes too many oak trees out. That's just unacceptable. It's the wrong density for the adjacent properties, especially the 2.5-acre properties that it's going to be abutting. I have a concern with the piece that's between the back of the lot and the eastern property line. I see there's a distance there. Who's going to maintain that? Are there fences going to be in there? Are there going to be fences on the back of their lots? And then a 50-foot setback there, that would be appropriate. I think lots 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and 13 are totally inappropriate. They're too tall. They're too high for the surrounding areas, and they're going to encroach in the views. Fire road is unacceptable. I have not heard the fire marshal state that road is acceptable, and until we get that, we have no idea whether this can go forward or not. Now it's up to this council to keep as much of this land pristine in perpetuity, and not just for a few days, a few years, but for...
Okay, thank you. Next speaker.
Anna Unkovich, 637 Osillo, Council. Three quick comments. Most of them I've already addressed in a letter to you last week, but three new things. I'd like to remind the developer that it wasn't so very long ago that they lauded how wonderful this treasure was when they were trying to trade it for the park at the top of James Way. That treasure is no less of a treasure now. In fact, the more we know about global warming, the importance of every single tree becomes more critical to the survival of our Earth. I would like to publicly request that this developer try to work with some environmental group, land conservancy, somebody to protect this. They could become the hero of the community in perpetuity to protect this property rather than to devastate it with the building. I would like to formally request that addendum that you spoke of earlier, that it is up for public viewing. I'd like to make that an official request. And then finally, as I get a little older and wiser, I realize that my best decisions are not made in moments of my emotion, whether it be exuberance or fear. And so we look to you in these chairs as our elected officials to take the facts that have come before you, and in this case, they've come before you for many, many years now on this particular property, and to look to those facts and to make a decision in the best interest of the community and to protect this treasure. I see this plan seriously compromising the restrictions that you have already established, be it better, perhaps, but it still seriously impacts that treasured community. So we look to you to make those rational decisions when we become emotional. And thank you for many, many years of time on this particular project. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your comments. Anyone else?
Joel Kauser, 707 Osillo. Good evening, Mr. Mayor, Council. We're back again. And this project, for the way it's drawn and presented to you tonight, is as bad, if not worse, than any of the others. I'll leave the environmental topics to the experts, and mine are for human visual impacts. It will just make a developed scar right up the side of the hill and does not fit with the area at all. I have a real question about the elevations on these lots. We all know what the James Way retaining walls look like. And if you have an access road with a 15% grade and homes on 7,000 square foot lots, some 9,000, 7,000 plus, 9,000 plus, and others, but they're basically very small lots. They will need steep, tall retaining walls to terrace up the hill. And the 7,000 square foot lot is not big enough to bring in landscaping and trees that someday in the future, years down the road, might even screen some of this development. But back to the visual, it just doesn't fit on the hillside, and they have 26 acres to work with, and I'm sure there's plenty of money that could be made in a proper development. If it's homes on multiple acreages that can be tucked into the hillside that would match the ranches to the east, or like the lady before me, trade the property off for some other developable property and keep it as a natural parkland and or green area. So thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for your comments. Anyone else would like to come forward?
Good evening, City Council. My name is Doug Tate. I live at 645 Acillo, and I am a planning commissioner, but and I do have a conflict of interest as a planning commissioner, but I'm speaking tonight as a public citizen on this topic. A few things here. The revised final subsequent EIR dated February 04 had a habitat definition plan, which differs with the preliminary tree plan regarding the extent of Pismocloarcia. The identified patch of Pismocloarcia in the habitat definition plan looks like it is very close to the proposed Blossom Valley Road. I think that needs to be... Very briefly on the road / creek crossing, it was recommended in mitigation measure B-2A of the draft supplemental EIR that a span bridge rather than a culvert is a preferred structure for preserving Meadow Creek as a wildlife corridor. Culverts can become clogged with vegetation, which make it very difficult for wildlife movement. Briefly on oak tree removal and impacts, we should remember that this project does not just remove 33 oak trees and transplant 27 others. This project changes the habitat and diversity of the oak woodland by impacting 60 oak trees. And also, I'd ask City Council to please revisit Dr. David Shipping's 127-04 letter regarding impacts to oak and transplantation as a mitigation. In a nutshell, he states the success in transplanting trees will be limited by lack of suitable and unoccupied habitat on site. That's very important. Briefly on slope concerns, this proposal does not avoid slopes greater than 20%. From the provided slope analysis map, it looks like to me that both the fire access road and lots 5 through 14 all have slopes of 25 to 30% or more. On homeowner association, the City Council has stated the reliance of an HOA for long-term protection of the environment is speculative and has not been demonstrated to be adequate, but that is back in the plan again. And on the fire emergency access road / trail, a question that needs to be answered, will this be a multi-use trail or just for pedestrians? Many different considerations if equestrians are allowed to use this trail to go down on site. I've built many trails in my career, and we avoid slopes of 20% or more. We like to go 15% just for erosion control. And from the slope analysis map provided, grades of over 20% are shown. Some concerns are erosion and maintenance of this section. Who is going to maintain it? And then the water coming down the cul-de-sac to Upper Blossom Valley Road could be a concern also. Let's have a clarification on the Pismocloarcia. From Jason's presentation, the habitat ranking analysis map, number 3, it mentions Pismocloarcia unique habitat. In the applicant response to both of these City Council findings regarding Pismocloarcia habitat, the applicant response is the occurrences of Pismocloarcia are avoided. Occurrences of Pismocloarcia are much different than the habitat of Pismocloarcia. Different survey dates reveal different occurrences of Pismocloarchia. Protecting known suitable habitat of Pismocloarchia would be preferable to avoiding occurrences of Pismocloarchia, which fluctuate from year to year. Finally, I ask you that the 2007 addendum to the revised final subsequent EIR be circulated because of all the prior substantial public comment. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any other comments? Okay, we'll close the public comment period for item 10A. And once again, what we're doing this evening is offering observations and recommendations on this pre-application item. So, Councilmember Costello, why don't we start with you here?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll be happy to start things off. My initial reaction to seeing this was a positive one in terms of it seems to be avoiding a lot of the really sensitive areas that we're trying to protect. That said, there are a few things that I will be very, very carefully looking at when this comes back before us. The first one is going to be slopes. I've got a little bit of a difficulty trying to picture in my mind what this is going to look like. If we got a 15% roadway going up there, we're going to have to be doing a lot of chopping. I did a little simple drawing here and trying to visualize this. It's going to be difficult to accomplish this, and I'm going to be very, very attentive to what kind of retaining walls are necessary, what do they look like, how visible are they to other locations. It seems like we're in an area that's got some real steep slopes in there, and I've got some concerns about that. I do like the fact that we're avoiding the lower flat area that has the Pismocloarchia habitat, but I will be looking carefully at the slope issue and retaining walls. And it's very difficult to transplant oak trees. We're going to try and transplant 28. I know those 28 are not all going to survive. I'd be surprised if half of them do survive. So let's go very carefully when we go to the oak tree issue. Also, the riparian area, let's honor that 50-foot setback. I'm a little hazy right now on what the impacts are going to be to the corridor and the wildlife corridor through that area. That, I think, we have to be very careful, and let's take a good look at that when we do come with the final plan. So I think that's going to be a critical issue also. The Homeowners Association, I don't want to count on a Homeowners Association to enforce anything, so if we do take the step of setting up some sort of a funding mechanism that will take care of that, we don't have to depend on an HOA to be the enforcement arm. I think that's appropriate, too. Look very carefully at that. Mr. Tate brings up some great questions in terms of different maps showing different Pismocloarchia environments. So let's be very clear that we're identifying the proper areas and we're avoiding them with the final project that comes forward. And one final comment I would like to make, going back to the reservation here and the transfer of densities, I'm going to evaluate this project, whatever project comes before me, based on its merits and the environmental considerations for this site and the proposal this year for this site. And I'm going to do the same thing for anything that comes forward for Noyes Road. I don't see a direct transfer. I don't see a direct connection between trading impacts on one area for impacts on another. I won't do that. I'll look at them individually and evaluate them solely on the impacts to that location taken in consideration for that site. I do see this as an improvement. I hope we can make it even better than what we've got here and avoid any of the severe impacts. And let's see what you can come up with. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Guthrie.
I guess I, too, had a
fairly positive reaction looking at this. I think obviously we see the primary environmental issues, the impacts to the Clarkie and the impacts HOA, and the HOA attempting to enforce the rules on people's backyards. I think that was at least my preliminary or primary concern, was that that would be a very difficult situation to place an HOA in. I think here we're seeing that the border is now with the road, and it's an area that would be much easier to monitor and much easier to enforce mitigation measures on down the road. That said, I do think we'd all be better off if we had a third party who both had a specialty and a specific interest going forward in not only maintaining these riparian and Clarkie areas, but actually improving them in the future. I'm thinking of something like the Small Wilderness Society in Los Osos or something along those lines that like I say, has a special interest in the environmental concerns that are here. So I'm hoping that going forward that would be a direction that both the community that is concerned about the environment here, but also the developer would look at establishing going forward. I do have two fairly specific concerns. One is also the slopes, as mentioned by Councilman Costello. I really will want to see how you're going to pad those out. I hope that you can take a more of a finesse approach than you are here. This is really just a bunch of retaining walls and flat areas, and that you can take a look at a more specialized approach, I'll say, to actually padding the home sites rather than just erect a bunch of retaining walls and create some flat areas. I don't want to see a repeat of the terracing that we saw on the highlands next door. We certainly wouldn't want to see that back on this area here, right next to this pristine area, and then we just jam in all these retaining walls. The other area that I have a real concern about is, in fact, how you deal with the drainage here. I do think, as mentioned, we have traditional jurisdictional drainage area here that there's a lot of water moving through here. But specifically, the way that you're going to deal with the water that's now hitting the impervious surfaces that actually has significant potential for pollution. I understand that you're dumping it out onto what you're calling a grassland, but we're actually showing it as an emergent wetland in our plan here. So I think that's an area you're going to have to convince me on that you can handle that. I'm not saying it's undoable, and there's lots of new methods for doing it, but I do think that's an area that you're particularly veins way, and also from the homes up above and from the road from the homes to the north. There are still impacts. I will say we do want to see in that final plan the multiple Clarkia reports so that we can really make an evaluation of how much impact there is to the Clarkie area. I do hope that we'll continue. I noticed in your report you said you'll reevaluate all the enhancements that we talked about last time. But I do hope you're taking as open a look as is reasonable there about ensuring that we're at least equal, if not superior, to what's not only there today, but what was probably there 10 or 15 years ago when this whole process started. I probably have somewhat less concerns about the removal of 33 trees here. It works out to in the replanting. I understand that replanting is we're getting more and more successful. I do think, given the trade out here, that 33 trees represents about 2% of the trees on site, although they may be very specific trees. I didn't review the tree report that closely, but considering the number of trees that are on site, I think that's a relatively small impact compared to the compared to impacting the Clarkie or the wetlands. I do just would like someone either, I don't know if it has to be tonight, but the fire road's been in every plan I've ever seen. Now I'm hearing that it was never approved, so that is a concern for me that I assume it has been, but it sounds as if maybe it wasn't.
Yeah, I do think we do have a sort of a, if you want to call it a cumulative concern, or but the wildlife corridor here does it. I'll say that it's being squeezed down into only the steep part. My experience is that wildlife will probably find their way through there anyway, but I would like to hear some discussion about the impact here of squeezing down. I always have trouble with directions on this property. What would be the southeast corner here that we've actually narrowed that down significantly from what it was in either of the other two plans, that we need to know exactly what you're proposing when you come back. Because, for me particularly, the drainage is a huge issue as far as we may very well protect this wetland and then wipe it out in 5 or 6 years because we didn't handle the drainage properly. So those are my comments. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Fellows.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I visited the site again today, and I was out there yesterday. Been out there many times in the past when I was on the Planning Commission. I've studied the applicant's revised project description, read staff's report, and spent about an hour with Teresa today getting my questions answered. I've heard the applicant's presentation tonight and the public testimony. First, let me say that I, too, was impressed with the fact that there are fewer homes, although based on the remaining environmental restraints, which I think there are many, I have no idea how many lots really will end up with homes on them here. But I think it definitely there are a lot of constraints still to consider. I'm impressed with the fact that, at least I was until Mr. Tate's comments, that the Pismo-Clarkia areas seem to be avoided. Mr. Tate's comments reminded me that when I was on the Planning Commission, I think it was Ms. Althaus, the lady botanist who seemed to live for Pismo-Clarkia, she did mention the fact that in different years, Clarkia would be in different places. So I think I'm glad Mr. Tate brought that up, and that needs to be checked into very carefully. I appreciate the fact that, pardon me, that the road has been narrowed in a few places and jigged and jagged a little bit to miss some trees, and the fact that we do have an off-site emergency access road. Now, my concerns are fairly many. Some have been already mentioned, but I'll repeat those just because I want to go down through my notes and not miss anything. I do have serious concerns regarding the top two cul-de-sac lots. In my opinion, they're too steep. Too much grading, and I think there are retaining walls called out there, and the fact that there are proposed to be two rather, I think, decent-sized oak trees removed from the lots, or actually more than that. I think those two lots are very problematical, 12 and 13. And then lot two, according to the applicant's description, is within the riparian area buffer. Will be perhaps a major part of your development. So that tree, in my mind, silly to take it out, as well as a number of other trees. Cutting down and removing oaks should be avoided as much as possible. I don't really, it's easy for me to look at your plan and see you haven't really done the best job you could, because a lot of the oak trees seem to be right at the periphery of the road or at the edge of some lots and so on. But when you look at the number of oak trees that you're proposing to cut down and just chip up and do away with, and then others that you're talking about moving, which may survive or may not, but even if they survive, it could be 4, 5, 6 years before they start to grow again. I have a problem with lots 11, 9, 14, 15, 16, and 17, and 6, based on the trees that should be avoided, but you say they can't be. And of those, 11, 14, 15, 16, and 17 are the ones that have oaks on or near the property line. So it seems that these could be avoided with a little bit more care and a little bit of proper engineering. There's an oak tree in a little bit of a cut remnant down on Highway 101, and it's just in an island, and it seems to be surviving very fine. So the whole rest of what was once a peninsula has been ripped off by Highway 101 grading, and the oak tree is still there, and it's alive. So I think you can do more to avoid oak trees. Tree number 9734 is at the edge of the emergency access road, 9734. I don't see why that couldn't be avoided. 9719 is on the edge of Blossom Valley Road. I speak from some experience. I have some degrees in botany and horticulture and have taught the subject and so on in the past. And I was a little bit dismayed and concerned that it didn't seem like this time the applicant has mentioned the eucalyptus trees. I took a careful look at eucalyptus trees out there today. I should say that there are many, many species of eucalyptus, many of which are very useful. Blue gum eucalypts are good for windbreak, and that's about all. And those are what you have back there on the property. They're growing like wildfire, like weeds. They're reseeding, they're spreading, and if left there, the eucalyptus trees will end up destroying this oak woodland eventually. And also some of the areas that were set aside in the past by this developer, which are really very beautiful and doing well now, where you have some Torrey pine trees, which I don't have a problem with them growing in amongst the oaks because they are California natives, but the eucalyptus trees have just got to go. And they're also a fire hazard. There's some folks that can, but the well that is on the property, it would be wonderful if it was given to the city to use for perhaps irrigation. It's been mentioned in the past, irrigation of the oak of the park up James Way. One of the neighbors directly above Oak Tree 9479 would like the barbed wire fence replaced with something not so unsightly, and I think that's not an unreasonable request. I'm almost done. I think that you're really missing the boat if you don't use a bridge rather than a culvert. The culvert is, in my mind, just an earthen dam pushed over into the creek area. And then you've got a hole through it through which wildlife maybe could squeeze. The fact that the rationale that there's another culvert like that a little bit downstream to me is not a good reason to do the same thing up there. I've been in developments in other areas in Oregon where there's a well-placed bridge, and it's a real asset to the project rather than a detraction. So in my mind, the culvert has got to go. And finally, if and when homes are built here, the HOA must hire a consultant to monitor the clarkia, the eucalyptus sprouts from the stumps, seedlings, and so on. I'm sure that unless there's a retired botanist who's a fanatic about clarkia and eucalyptus living there, I don't think the HOA can do the job. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem.
Hey, Mr. Mayor. All right. I do want to just stress this as a pre-app, so I may not go into quite the same level of detail as some other members. I was very encouraged when I saw this plan. I still am. I don't believe that it's insurmountable, most of the issues that we've discussed tonight. Things that I will probably be looking at when an actual plan comes forward is I was a little concerned with Lot 1, some of the same issues that Councilman Fellows had. I think it's actually an asset to not probably have that lot just because of the mature trees there, and there were two actually relatively large oak trees on that lot. I'm going to be concerned with the drainage issue. I think these are not insurmountable issues, but I don't think that as they were depicted tonight is probably sufficient. We're going to need to capture the drainage that's coming off of the project itself, not the actual open space as much, but the actual project. I'm going to want to see more than just a siltation filter with that, and also be concerned with the speed at which the water is then released back into as you come back into the area. I would support the recirculation of the EIR addendum. Slopes retaining walls. I believe that anything is possible, and I believe that there are very possible ways to do retaining walls in a nice way. Obviously, what was done on James Way with the Great Wall of China was not the correct way to do it. So I will be looking at that very closely. With that said, I believe that because that the when you look at the one map that shows the elevations, obviously the erosion flags the area considerably worse than it in reality is. So I think the biggest concern areas are going to probably be lots 12 and 13. And depending on how those walls are done and if they're screened by the homes themselves, if the people on lots 12 and 13 are the only ones that are really truly impacted by a larger retaining wall, that isn't going to concern me. My concern is going to be the impact off-site and how the walls would appear from a distance. If we are talking about multiple retaining walls between pads where they're gradual and there's landscape buffers between that, which is kind of what I think I heard tonight. That might be very viable if we're talking about 6-8 foot walls between lots with a partition fence on top of that. That would not be acceptable. Let's see. I would like to see some kind of visual buffer between lots 3 through 11 and the estate lots in Easy Street. I didn't see any replanting of the transplant trees there. I'm not sure if all the screening can be accomplished solely in the area that's depicted right now. There may be an opportunity to work with the adjacent property owners and see if they would be willing to take some of the transplanted oak trees or some new oak trees as well to help mitigate that impact. But I would like to see if we could do something to help mitigate the impact they're going to have. The unfortunate reality is this is where we want the development to take place. We have basically said stay away from the Pismo Clarkie at all cost, and then we've identified the wetlands as the secondary area. This is where I wanted to see development. I think this is where the majority of people wanted to see development. And so, you know, there may have been some bad decisions made by previous councils that allowed development to occur at all, or zoning to allow development to occur here. Can I accept that versus the Pismo Clarkia impact? Because the Pismo Clarkia basically has to be either relocated or completely avoided, the oak trees are going to be what's going to take some of the brunt here. The fortunate reality is it is relatively a small impact, and so I would like to see if there are any specific trees that are right on the edge that potentially could be saved. I do think they're a very valuable asset to the development as well. And so therefore, when you get into actually design this project more specifically, if we can work individually on each site and not just wholesale come in and blade the project, that would be my preference to try to save some of these individual trees. I definitely want to see the riparian and wetland enhancement plan brought back in the same format or even better than what we were talking about before. There are definitely impacts here. We're not going to kid ourselves and say there are no impacts here. And so that will definitely need to be brought back. I think Councilman Fellows also mentioned the on-site well. I would also like to see that reactivated and given to the city to help mitigate the impact to the city's water system. Let's see. I think I've covered the majority of my issues. So I will say right now we are looking at this as a pre-app, and you know I expect working drawings. I may have some other issues, but those are my primary at this time. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, thank you. Well, I don't think I have anything new to add, but I do have some emphasis on some of the points that have already been covered. First of all, the top of my list, I think, for a number of different reasons, is the slope ratio. And when I say a couple of different issues, I'm speaking primarily of not so much the steepness, although that is a factor, but I'm looking at a sort of a diffused viewshed of the entire hillside and the contour. I think one of the criticisms that a lot of us had when the second phase of the Highlands was developed, and it wasn't just us, it was people from all over the community that would stand across Oak Park and look at the hillside toward the natural contour of the hills. And related to that, I'm going to talk a little bit about drainage in a moment, but the mitigation for some of the cuts in the other development was in fact retaining walls, which have already been mentioned, and I'm not going to go into a lengthy dissertation on those. I think several of us had an issue with both the size and the intrusiveness, if you will, of those of that retaining wall network. So I would not like to see a repeat of that. As far as the road access, I think Councilmember Guthrie stated it best. When we look at the diagram up here, I think the other plans that we saw had had the road access coming across here, and so it was less intrusive on the habitat in Meadow Creek, but very much intrusive into the Clarkia area. So now what's happened is that we've had a realignment of that road, and now the impact to the wetlands and the habitat, you know, there's a lateral impact that runs for a greater distance along that area in order to avoid the Clarkia. So I think he's right in his analysis. This was a trade-off. And it appears that this is the only access in and out to any potential development on this site. That said, if that's what we have to live with, I would support some of the observations that have already been made in terms of the option for a bridge as opposed to culverts. I have to be honest with you, the discussion that we heard this evening with regard to drainage did not leave me with a lot of confidence that that issue has been thoroughly addressed. I think one of the important things that we need to focus on here is learning from our mistakes, and especially particularly with this applicant and the historical experiences that we've had, again, with Highlands 2. First of all, I want to approach drainage from two issues. I agree with the Mayor Pro Tem and the others who have indicated that we're not just talking about sedimentation here. We're talking about other substances that come off of areas that have been paved over. And there's a whole long list of the impacts from chemicals and pesticides and so on and so forth. The city has a increasingly... And I feel appropriately so, increasingly restrictive policy when it comes to development in and around creek systems. And we are requiring in other areas of the city that biofilters be installed, and I think this certainly needs to be the case here. The other aspect of drainage, the Mayor Pro Tem touched on it, but I think the city manager lived through that experience, and so did I. Once again, in Highlands 2, was the fact that if you develop on steep slopes, the streets are steep, the lots themselves are steep, and it does create a situation where there is rapid water running off. And we saw a good example of that occur in the Highlands 2, where we had velocity of water that was over and above the capacity of a storm drain to address it. And in fact, in the particular case I'm recalling, I don't think there was a storm drain engineered into the street. So we had front yards flooding. So those are, I'm posing this as lessons learned that as we approach this particular project, those are things that we have to be mindful of whenever we're dealing with a slope issue. On the issue of the Clarkia impact, I noted that there was notations in what the applicant provided for us. I think the label on some of the colored areas on the maps that we saw said approximate extent of Clarkia impact. And I guess, Teresa, this is for you, that if we do move forward this evening with the addendum, and this is given to a consultant, we want to make sure... I do recall in previous submittals that we had two sets of maps. We had what was generated in the EIR, and then we also had at the time, and I can't recall the gentleman's name, maybe Mr. Law can help me out here, but you had a representative that I can't remember. He was a short fellow with glasses, and Dean Coker. That was it, yeah. Mr. Coker came forward with his maps, and there seemed to be some question as to whether or not the two were exactly the same, and I think there were some differences in terms of looking at environmental impacts. I want to make sure that we're dealing with the right maps and the right impact analyses as that addendum moves forward. Since I did raise that issue, and you answered it, Teresa, I want to make sure that that addendum is noticed and that the public has an opportunity to review it as if it were an EIR or a supplemental EIR, perhaps not as official, but I think you get it. What I'm assuming is the will of the council here, getting at the fact that we do want to unwrap this for public comment, however we do that. My position on homeowners associations, being put in the position of either monitoring or enforcing, it's not fair to the association, certainly not fair to those who expect that efficient monitoring and enforcement is going to take place by a homeowners association. It's not plausible. My position has been consistent on this through all of the presentations that have come forward on this particular project, and it still remains the same. We're just going to have to find a better way. As far as the oak tree impacts, and I realize there will be some, my only request here is that we do whatever we can do to minimize those impacts, either through removal or transplant. And here's another, actually a positive way in which we can approach this. Again, historically, through experience, if you look at Rancho Grande 2, and I'm not sure, I don't think that was your development, if you look at Rancho Grande 2, I mean, they went so far as to build a sort of a detour around a major oak tree in that development as opposed to removing it. So it all depends on the value that you place on a tree and how creative and imaginative you can get to preserve it. And here is an instance where an actual roadway went on either side of it, and it seems to be working just fine. The last comment that I want to make is to pretty much put a period on some of the comments that have already been made by my colleagues up here, and that is that I don't want to see a nexus here with this particular project and Noyes Road. As far as I'm concerned, they are two separate projects. I believe Councilmember Costello indicated that in terms of the characteristics, each has its own merits, each has its own restrictions, and they need to be judged separately. So those are my comments at this juncture, and with that, I'll ask the council if there are any other comments that anyone would like to make, and I'd like to give the applicant an opportunity to come back up if you so desire, or if you have any questions about anything that we've said this evening.
I'm not sure where to start, so I'll be general since there were so many comments. I first off want to express appreciation because the comments you've made have been very specific and are the kind of comments that we can build on and actually use to address those concerns and try to modify the project. There are a couple points that I was wanting to say. We focused on presenting a design to you and focused less on getting to the specifics of the environmental review consciously, because we know that there's yet those issues are yet to be addressed specifically in the addendum. By the way, we have no objection and do encourage the public distribution of the addendum, so we don't have any surprises with it being presented to the council without public input in advance. But because of our focus being on design and not on some of the environmental issues, you didn't hear us speak in the same level of detail. The enhancement concept for the riparian area, I know one of the comments was in that regard, is to use the enhancement plan that is in the current addendum as a starting place. If it needs to be beefed up a little bit, we have no concern about that. The eucalyptus trees, for example, were a part of that plan, and they I know that that some of the members of the public in past have expressed a concern about removal of eucalyptus, so we're somewhat caught with not being able to please everybody, but the plan at least was to exclude them. The drainage concerns, I believe that the reason why they weren't addressed in more detail is that the prior plan that came before you did have some very specific mechanisms in it to address not just siltation, but to address pollutants that would come from the street runoff. And we intend to, we did not hear an issue on that, so we didn't address it. Our goal, though, is to incorporate those same kind of design concepts present a drainage plan that addresses the very issues that you've all discussed. Exactly what that would take remains to be seen, but the idea was that we would address drainage in the same manner that you're looking to have it addressed. And I think that those are the only general comments. Jason, is anything else I'm missing? I think that's it. Okay. One more? Or more than one? Go ahead.
No, just more than one. I just wanted to get a couple of responses real fast, or just maybe to bring a couple responses to what I've heard. I've heard from each person, each member of the council, concerned about slopes. And what I think here is the challenge is trying to communicate what is occurring there besides a bunch of colored triangles on a map. And what I'm going to be challenged with is trying to communicate that and how to communicate it to you. And that's what I'm going to go away with and try to come back with something a little bit better that can show that. I tried to do that through some section cuts. I was trying to communicate that, you know, to a certain degree with the maps, but I don't think it does it justice on a 2D level. So I will try to come back with something better on that. Second, regarding access, just to note that lengthy conversations have occurred with Chief Fibick about the issue of access, and we've all known his goals, and I realize Chief Fibick is no longer with the city, but we've maintained the goals that he has tried to achieve, and the road access going to the Hidden Oaks property was an acceptable form of access to him. He saw it as the only alternative besides achieving the easy street accesses, which is his ultimate goal. And it's, you know, the easy street access is something we still would like to pursue, and we have, but without good response. In relation to building height, I just heard a couple quick comments about it, nothing too elaborate about it, but the building heights and the reflection of the conceptual elevations that are in the drawings, in the section cuts, are based on the EIR requirements, which basically said that 50% of the roof shall not exceed 16 feet in height. And that is the requirements that we've looked to in order to develop those conceptual elevations. And lastly, on Pismo Clark here, just wanted to go through and confirm that Lindy Outhouse, with Outhouse and Mead, did complete a secondary evaluation of the entire property. That was done by field walking with several biologists, several of members of their company, staking it with flags, and then the habitat was actually surveyed in with an instrument and not used with an inaccurate GPS or just using aerial photos. The approximate reference that you that was made in relation to the Pismo Clarkia, that actually came from the EIR. The EIR says an approximate occurrence. And in the case of Lindy Outhouses, and the discrepancy between the two plans, there was another portion of Pismo Clarkia that was noted on Lindy's plan. And if you notice, the plan, that particular occurrence was also avoided in the proposed plan. So that's my comments. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you. Sure. Go right ahead.
I just wanted to clarify at least my position and also what I think I may have heard from the other council members, but specifically mine as to concern about slopes and the grading, and that was that you don't just take this basic, you know, I'll call it the simplest approach, which is to grade and build retaining walls, that you actually look at some alternatives that would sort of guarantee that we're going to avoid the kinds of impacts we saw on the Highlands next door, and really kind of finesse that to try to find the very best possible solution there that makes it as close to fitting into the natural environment as possible instead of just a whole series of flat lots. Just clarifying my position, it isn't just the way that you presented it. It's actually, I think, an alternative way of achieving it. Thank you.
One more comment on a slightly different subject, but nexus to Noe's Road. I'm sorry, I should have addressed that. We don't see a nexus, and there may have been a point, there's been a lot of confusion about it. The Noe's Road was presented as an alternative in the original Supplemental Environmental Impact Report, and actually something that we didn't want as an alternative. We didn't see it. Just because Castle Rock owned that property, we didn't think there should be a study of it because it wasn't proposing to develop that property. But then somewhere along the line, there was talk about, well, if Castle Rock couldn't get all of the units on this particular site, then they should be transferred over to the other site, and I think there was conversation. But that's in history in the past. That alternative was never brought forth from the original Supplemental Environmental Impact Report, and Castle Rock is looking only at this project and is presenting this project on its own merit. So just to clarify, we're not seeing a nexus to the Noe's Road site either.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate you sharing that one. All right, any other comments, questions from the council staff? Anything you would like to add? Okay, then we have an item here before us, and that is the addendum. Is that correct?
Right, and we were going to address a minor modification to the addendum. With the idea that we're going to circulate the addendum, there would probably be a need for a response to the public comments, which is not currently in the scope of work. That's on page 4 of your Exhibit A, the consultant services agreement. So in talking with Teresa, I think that RINCON had indicated that, and you can elaborate on this, a not-to-exceed amount of $4,000 would be appropriate to put in there. So I think it would probably be a 3C would be response to public comments, and a corresponding amount would be $4,000. And we request that you'd add that to the motion.
Okay.
And maybe Teresa can just clarify the amount, because I'm not aware of where it came from.
The amount was the estimate provided by RINCON just yesterday, so we didn't get it into your packet.
Okay. All right. With that, would anyone like to try a motion here? So we're looking at under recommendation item 2.
Right, it's just you're just dealing with the, 2.
With the modification that Tim just mentioned.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we approve a contract amendment for the preparation of addendum number 2 to the previously certified revised final subsequent environmental impact report and CIR by RINCON Consultants with the additional language as provided.
With regard to public review.
With regard to public review.
Okay. We have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
All right. Any other discussion on this motion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Fellows?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. Okay. That takes us to item 11, new business. We have none. Item 12, City Council Member items. There are none listed.
Mr. Mayor, is that where you want me to bring it up, Steve? Is under the...
Probably under Council Member Communications.
Okay. City Manager items?
No, sir.
Anything this evening? All right. Council Communication. I have one, and you do as well, Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This actually has come up regarding the fireworks stands and the process of how we award them, and as well as some of the forms that are required. There's turned out that there's been numerous groups in the past that have, because of the volunteer nature of the organizations, there's a form that's required to be filed that requires the proof that the monies that were raised, the majority of it is used for the citizens of the community. And unfortunately, because of the nature of these organizations, sometimes that form has not been submitted, and it precludes them from being able to submit an application the following year. And so we have actually a fairly strict ordinance that restricts that. And so what I'm asking is that we bring forward potentially some modifications to the ordinance that would actually change how we're even awarding potentially, and also looking at when this form is due. And I've discussed this with the city manager, and he said that if we bring it forward now, it could alleviate us from having to do a lottery this year and then again next year. So I'm just asking that the city manager is able to bring forth some potential recommendations to changing the way the fireworks stands are divvied out.
So essentially what you're asking us to do is unwrap the ordinance, take another look at it with some potential modifications, and have that come back as an item?
That's correct.
Okay. Anyone opposed to that? Okay. Is that good enough, Steve?
Yeah, we've already had some discussions. I think we have some ideas to improve the process.
Okay. The request that I have, I put it under council communication, and it was actually based on a conversation that I've had recently on a couple of occasions with Nick Alter, and I think that all of us, with the exception of one, was at the dedication this afternoon of the Greenbelt kiosk. I met with Nick some time ago, and Mary Ann Reese, the mayor from Pismo Beach, was also there. And I've also discussed this with Steve Lieberman, who's the mayor in Grover. And what we're looking at is a potential for a joint session of the councils, hopefully sometime in June. If it's absolutely impossible, then maybe in July. But we would like to shoot for a meeting in June. And this would not be this would be an information session. It would be an education session. Nick has put together a program which includes some of the local builders. And I think it would be very informative. We're not asking any of the cities, including us, to take any action. Once again, it would be an opportunity for education. It would be a public forum. The public could ask questions as well. So I think what we need to do is keep the energy, no pun intended, behind this effort, if you will. And I think this is probably the best way to do it. So if no one has any objections, I was hoping that perhaps you could maybe work with Kevin Rice and Bob Peralt? In Grover, and see if we can't put something together. And in the meantime, I'll keep the dialogue open with the two mayors. But I don't look at this as being a long evening. It would maybe be an hour and a half presentation. It would be on our way.
That sounds great to me.
Everybody okay with that?
Only restriction I have is not the last week of June. I'm not going to be available that week.
Yeah, it would. Same here. I got a graduation, hopefully, to go to.
Actually, that could be fun then, because as soon as school's out, I think I'm gone for 2 weeks, because I think I've mentioned that I'll be missing the first meeting. So unless we could do it literally at the very beginning of June, I wouldn't be able to attend the first the middle 2 weeks.
Schedule it right after that budget session.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe we can combine the two.
Well, once again, this is not something that is going to require action on the part of the councils, and I'm sure, given the time of year, people are going to start vacations as soon as school is out. So I seriously doubt if we're going to get 100% attendance, but at the same time, if we can get the majority of the councils there, that might be the best we can do. And it would still accomplish our goal of holding and hosting an educational forum, not just for government, but for the public as well. Okay. So if I could, Steve, have Nick coordinate with you in terms of the agenda, and I think he already has one drafted out. So. Okay, so we'll leave it in your hands.
Mr. Mayor,
yes.
I have a couple of things. A couple of leftovers from last meeting. There was a Cade Newman who made a remark regarding the stop sign, which is now gone. But he also mentioned that James Way needed striping from where the stop sign was down to Tally Ho. And I don't think we've addressed that and looked into that, have we? Or at least I don't know about it. There is no center stripe going down, and he thought that that would be something that might be helpful.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the exact comment, and I don't. I'll research the minutes. Although we do have, we are looking at striping throughout James Way in response to council's request to look at traffic calming measures as part of the discussion on the stop sign, and that's one of the things we're looking at. We'll be repaving James Way soon, and so it's a perfect time to maybe recommend some changes that could serve a number of purposes. So we are working on that.
Thanks for that. And then I appreciated the amount of work that staff put into answering Linda Shepherd's concerns regarding puppies and kittens. But she also, I was going back through the minutes, she also mentioned the drainage problems. And first of all, on the letter, the response, has she gotten a copy of that back regarding the dogs and cats?
No, she hasn't, but I'd be glad to forward that to her if you'd like me to.
Okay. And then regarding her comments on drainage,
Public Works Director was trying to contact her last week to follow up on that. I haven't heard from him if he was successful yet, but he's working on that.
Okay, thanks. And then the last thing is a comment from a member of the public regarding going toward the freeway on Briscoe Road. When you stop at the green light, if you don't want to block the intersection, you stop. Cars keep cutting in front from westbound El Camino Real. This person suggested that a no right turn on red light might be the solution to that problem. So perhaps we can look into that. That's all. Thank you.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I did have one quick question. I think since we're talking about James Way and repaving, Chappelle right now, I noticed they've done the curb cuts for the access into the Kennedy Center, and it looks like they're putting in the water line and sewer. I assume that's all being done right now. Specifically, one, looks like they're starting the project, but two, so that all their street cuts have been done before we repave. Is that correct?
I think that's the intent. Yeah, I'd have to check in terms of.
I just want to make sure we do coordinate that.
Done. Sure.
Right, thank you.
Okay. Anything else? Any staff communication tonight?
Speaking of scheduling, I did just want to confirm once again on the budget study session, we've changed that now to May 29th, so hopefully that works with everybody because we do want to publicly publicize that.
No, I meant to get back to you on that. Just kidding. It's going to work. Okay, that takes us to 16, community comments and suggestions. Anything tonight, Steve?
Yes. Steve Ross, 211 Garden Street, and coming home from work yesterday down Grand James Way, I came to a complete stop at Hidden Oaks and realized there was no stop sign there. I pulled off at that time up Hidden Oaks to watch and see if there were any other fools around like me, and about 1 out of 10 people either came to almost a complete stop or a complete stop, then looked around for the stop sign before proceeding on. So maybe the people running the stop sign weren't quite as bad as it was portrayed.
Good, thanks. Kristen, anything?
No, nothing.
Okay. You know, it's something really unique when you can look at community comments and suggestions and name the audience personally.
It's a small thing.
No, actually, it's a good thing. Okay, if there's nothing else, and that takes us to item 17, which is adjournment.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, everyone.